Blog Talk Radio.
It is Sunday, May 20th, 2018, and this is Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchLivecast.com. Thanks for being with us. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks. You can find me on page 10 every week in the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter. And, of course, every Sunday here on Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLivecast.com. I'll have Pro Wrestling Torch contributor Michael Moore along with me here soon to discuss the big happenings in professional wrestling. Of course, we've got Monday Night Raw and SmackDown Live as we head toward Money in the Bank, which will be taking place Sunday, June 17th, 2018. And just a reminder, if you're an infrequent listener or a new listener to this show, we go on the air every week, every Sunday night at 8 p.m. Eastern on PWTorchLivecast.com for about 90 minutes of pro wrestling talk. On evenings that there are WWE pay-per-views, however, we go on the air immediately after the pay-per-view ends on the WWE Network or your local cable provider. So that show usually runs a little longer. We usually have a few more phone calls, questions, comments on those shows. So make sure to tune in then. That'll be the next show, Money in the Bank, on June 17th, 2018. We talk Raw, we'll talk SmackDown, we'll preview Money in the Bank, some big Money in the Bank news having happened this past week in the world of professional wrestling. Ronda Rousey challenging Nia Jax at the NBC Upfronts, which was hammered home Monday night on Raw. And some more matches made there. We'll talk NXT, we'll talk Impact Wrestling, and Evolve 105 going on tonight in Livonia, Michigan. We'll talk about that as well as the results of last night's Evolve 104 pay-per-view. But first, I am happy to welcome on to the show Michael Moore, Pro Wrestling Torch contributor, PWTorch.com writer, with his collectibles column. Michael, thanks for being on the show again.
Absolutely, Greg. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Before we get into the meat and potatoes of the show, Michael, give you some time. The floor is yours to discuss your latest collectibles column on PWTorch.com.
Sure. Yeah, the last couple of weeks had some kind of fun ones on there. I did an interview with Raven a couple of weeks ago, and he talked about everything from his own interest in collecting comic books, his thoughts on his wrestling figures from throughout the years, and some different things like that. So that was pretty cool. Check that one out. That's up there. Most recently, I did a column on some where to find some early independent cards of some of the newer guys that are in NXT, some recent signees, and then some guys that are popping up on TV now, some guys like Keith Lee, Donovan Dijak, a host of others, quite a few of them out there. A lot of guys have cards from either England or from some fan-made sets or from some different independent products over the years, or some different, there's some trading card game type things that are out there that some people have been included in. So check that out. And then, tossing around some ideas for this week, maybe just doing something a little more towards, action figures, or possibly I've had a couple of collectors contact me about an older column I did on VHS tapes. And I might be looking to update that pretty soon here.
And of course you can find Michael, rotating, through with other PWTorch.com contributors here and my co-host on Wrestling Night in America. Michael, I got to ask you about the Raven interview. He is one of the more interesting guys out there in the professional wrestling world. What was the interview with Raven like?
It was great. I mean, just very, I'd never talked to him before or anything. It's kind of funny because my very first wrestler interview professionally as a member of the media was supposed to be, was in 2000 when I was working for a newspaper in the Houston area. and it was supposed to be with Raven when he was with, he had come into WWE that summer, and it ended up getting moved around and ended up being with Chris Benoit instead. So that's just a little bit of trivia there. But the interview with him was great. He's was really, really fun to talk to and really just kind of really open, doesn't hold anything back. And he just, he's just, you know, really obviously very intelligent guy, which anybody who's watched him over the years knows that, and has that really bizarre sense of humor that just he'll kind of throw something weird in there here and there. But it was a lot of fun. I really like talking to him.
And again, you can find Michael's collectibles column on pwtorch.com. Michael, I want to talk about something that I'd planned to talk about last week here on the show. Didn't get to it, didn't have time for it, but I wanted to hit on it this week, and that is Major League Wrestling, Court Bauer's MLW, getting TV on beIN Sports each week, every Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern. MLW Fusion is the name of the show, and they've got the first five, I believe now, episodes up on YouTube in case you don't get beIN Sports. And I wrote a column in the current issue of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter on the first two episodes of MLW TV. And I know you've seen MLW TV. You've seen MLW even before they got TV. So I want to ask you your overall opinion of the show. What's your take on the presentation so far, the roster, just a kind of a big picture look at MLW Fusion?
Yeah, and I actually just read your column on that just a little bit earlier today, so to kind of prepare to talk about that a little bit. You know, I first watched it, I guess, when it was either last summer or last fall, somewhere around there, they did the MLW one-shot special, and had kind of done some monthly specials here and there up to that, and I really enjoy it. It has the advantage, which a lot of us say about NXT too, of being 1 hour every week, which I think helps.
Yeah.
They have one of the things that I think they have going for them more so than Impact is they feel like they have a roster of their own. Impact to me kind of feels like they're borrowing other companies' wrestlers at times. You know, guys will come in for a set of tapings and not be there anymore. And there's certainly some guys in MLW that wrestle elsewhere, Pentagon and some others, but They have a group of guys that feels like their own guys, some of them pretty well established. You know, Shane Strickland, I think, is the absolute right choice to be their champion. If I was going to be looking at starting a wrestling promotion in 2018, he'd be one of my top independent guys I'd be going after. Their roster, I think, is fantastic. Their commentary team, they have a real leg up there, being able to have Tony Schiavone and Rich Bocchini both doing a good job. The overall presentation of Guild Nightclub is, I mean, it's okay. I think it's okay to start with, but it does look very, very small and very, you know, for a company being Major League Wrestling, it does look very minor league, I think, just the size of it and some of the layout. But, you know, that'll change in time, I'm sure. They're going to New York for some tapings and things, but overall the presentation is, you know, the production values are very good. The wrestling is very good. I think the thing I'd like to see more of is I would like to know, just as if I was a casual viewer and I turned that on, I want to know who your stars are. There's a lot of back and forth matches. I think really focusing on a few guys, which they've done that great job with Shane Strickland. But, you know, I think some squash matches would be great to really, you know, especially early on to really establish some of these guys. More personality pieces and those types of things. But overall, I mean, I think if you're a fan of pro wrestling and looking for something different from WWE, but not so radically different, you know, I think that's a good product to check out. And like I said, it's an hour. That's one thing that really has going in its favor.
I would argue it may be the biggest thing it has going in its favor, really. You know, the Friday at 8 PM time slot is not great. And I think it's very helpful that they've put the shows up on YouTube for those who aren't able to see it live anyway, or you know, don't have DVR capabilities for whatever reason. One of the things that I noticed in watching those first two episodes is there were a few really good matches on here, which, you know, with their roster you would expect, but with wrestling the way it is in 2018, where you can like stumble out of your house and find really good matches, that's not something I don't think they can use as a calling card. You know, there was an era in professional wrestling, and really not that long ago, where companies could really sell themselves as, hey, we have the best in pro wrestling in-ring-wise. I mean, now every company, it's gotten to the point where guys are so talented in the ring, every company has their share of 3-4+ star matches everywhere you look. So while I was impressed by the in-ring work, it's hard for me to say MLW should sell themselves on that, because I don't think that helps them stand out any more than it would have maybe 20, 25 years ago. But what do you think they need to do besides having really good action every week and having that 1 hour show where it's not a huge time commitment every week to stand out from, you know, the Impact Wrestling, the Evolve, the companies that, you know, it's so easy to gain access to them with all the streaming options out there too.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about the quality of wrestling. I mean, you know, back in the early to mid 2000s, ROH could hang their hats on the fact that they had the best wrestling out there when WWE was really putting out a pretty slow and plodding product. You know, you'd go and watch those matches. Now, when you could turn on Raw every week and watch Seth Rollins wrestle, just being able to say that you have really good wrestlers is not nearly enough. I think they need to, like I said, they need to decide who their stars are, and they need to market those stars. Like I said, I think Shane Strickland has everything to him that you need. Bruce Mitchell has talked about quite a bit, and there was a writer or listener who sent in a letter to Wade on the Wade Keller hotline within the last couple of days, talking about how WWE doesn't have an African-American voice on its creative team. And I think that's so dead on. I mean, when you look at pop culture and you look at Black Panther and you look at music and movies and sports, to not have that presence, which WWE doesn't really have, I think is something that hurts them. I mean, they should be really going all in, not to use the phrase of the week, but with, you know, really push Shane Strickland and really push some of those guys that are unique to them and that are stars, because just, you're right, being able to say, and you know, if you've got a 1 hour show, I don't know that having the best 20 minute match of the week is really what your best option. You know, you've got an hour to get your stars over. So identify those stars, get them out there. Plus, there's a lot of guys on that roster who are big personalities who aren't necessarily the best wrestlers. Barrington Hughes and the Dirty Blondes, they're good acts, you know, but they're not going to put on those great matches. So really, you know, figure out who your stars are and separate them from the rest, because right now it kind of feels, and they're new, I mean, but it kind of feels like everybody's at one level. You know, who's that star? Who's AJ Styles in TNA in the early 2000s? Who's Bryan Danielson in ROH? Shane Strickland has the belt. He's the guy. But, you know, who's that handful of guys that are really your top guys there?
Yeah, and going back to what you were talking about with the lack of African-Americans in creative and WWE, unfortunately, the way things are set up, the buck stops with a 70-plus-year-old white billionaire who is not exactly in touch with that culture. And doesn't exactly, you know, and I'm using 50 years of history in WWE to make this statement, is not really in touch and doesn't know how to, isn't welcoming to those kind of ideas. It doesn't really know how to apply them, I don't think, in the right way. So you could have dozens of them pitching ideas, but when the buck stops with Vince McMahon, and if he doesn't quote unquote get it, then it's not going to pass his smell test, unfortunately. So, you'd like to see more of a presence, and you'd like to see some more openness from the people on top for those ideas. But we will have to see on that. 515-605-9345 is the number to call if you'd like to talk. Again, we're talking MLW TV here. We've got Raw, SmackDown Live, Money in the Bank coming up, and Impact, NXT, all the major shows. We talk about them all here on Wrestling Night in America. We're going to take our first break and come back with some calls, and we'll talk about Raw and what happened this week and what we can look forward to coming up. You're listening to Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLiveCast.com.
Searching for more great pro wrestling talk? Then join me, Jason Powell, host of the free weekly Pro Wrestling Boom podcast. Each week, you'll hear the latest news and analysis from me and my team at ProWrestling.net, along with other pro wrestling media members. Plus, the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast features long-form interviews with notable names in the pro wrestling industry. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Downcast, and all your favorite secondary apps, or visit us directly at pwboom.com. Once again, that's pwboom.com.
I tell you, I can't get enough of my Harry's shave gel, my Harry's razors. Two or three times a week I use them, and I have no complaints. They are the best razors I've ever used. Harry's stands behind the quality of their blades. They know that switching razors isn't an easy decision. So they created a trial offer. Claim yours by going to harrys.com/pwtorch. Harry's founders were fed up with overpaying for expensive razors with unnecessary features. They knew a great shave comes with great blades, made with sharp, durable steel that lasts. That's why they bought a factory that's been making some of the highest quality blades in the world for over 95 years. By selling directly to you over the internet, Harry's can offer their blades at a price much lower than the leading brand, just $2 per blade compared to $4 or more. Quality guarantee included. If you don't love your shave, let Harry's know within 30 days and they'll give you a full refund. Get a $13 value trial set that comes with everything you need for a close, comfortable shave, including a weighted ergonomic handle, a 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, and a travel blade cover. Listeners of my show, Wrestling Night in America, can redeem their trial set at harrys.com/pwtorch. Make sure you go to harrys.com/pwtorch to redeem your offer and let them know I sent you to help support the show. Back here on Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLivecast.com, I'm joined tonight by PWTorch.com contributor Michael Moore, talking Raw, SmackDown, Money in the Bank, all the big shows in professional wrestling that are coming up. We'll go to our first phone call right now. It is the 814 area code. I believe this is Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland. Ryan, are you with us tonight?
I am. The first question is for Michael. Since he's a collector of wrestling collectibles, I recently bought a set of NXT cards. Do you see them being maybe more valuable than the WWE cards because they might be less produced than the actual WWE brand cards?
You know, it depends on which product that is. Tops includes NXT cards in most of their, pretty much all of their WWE sets now. Which product was this? Do you know?
I believe it was Topps, but it's exclusively like all NXT cards.
Right, right. Yeah, they put out their first set of that in, I want to say 2016, and then they did one in 2017, and then they've got another one coming out now. It's hard to say. Certainly, it's certainly, like you said, more limited than the basic Topps WWE cards are, because I believe they were hobby exclusive with some of them sold at Target. For a lot of those guys, that was their first trading cards out there. So that's kind of cool to hang on to that.
Okay. My second question for you is, went to a wrestling show last night and Too Cold Scorpio wrestled, and he seemed like he hasn't lost a beat wrestling because he did all his signature moves. Is there a wrestler that you've seen on the indie circuit that's like up like close to the 50s that doesn't seem to have lost anything in the ring?
Well, you know, I think one of the guys who has really made a tremendous comeback lately and really is someone whose name is out there and is in high demand all of a sudden, and it seemed like this happened almost overnight, is Pierre-Carl Ouellette. Former Quebecer tag team partner with Jacques Rougeau. He sort of reinvented himself on the independent scene, had a big WrestleMania weekend. I know there are a lot of people coming out of those shows talking about him, and he's a guy who's in demand right now as far as getting bookings on the independent scene. And, you know, this is something that you wouldn't have thought of a year or two ago. Having seen some of the stuff that he's done since he's come back, it's not – like I said, he's reinvented himself a little bit, But he's certainly a guy who is probably more over now than he was, you know, when he was in WWE or WCW. Michael, I don't know if you know any offhand that you could think of as well.
Yeah, unfortunately, living in Wyoming, I don't get to see a whole lot of independent wrestling up close and in person.
Not a hotbed for indie wrestling out there?
No, not a hotbed for any sort of wrestling. You know, occasionally we'll get something in Denver, and I can make the drive down there, or maybe up in Billings, Montana, and Big Time Wrestling puts on some shows up in Missoula, Montana, which is kind of cool. But those are typically more nostalgia shows. But having seen, you know, you're absolutely right about Pierre Ouellette. I mean, it's crazy since WrestleMania weekend, really, how his name is just blossomed out there again after a lot of years of people really not even. I don't think a lot of people even realized he was still out there. And Scorpio, you kind of hear the same thing about. I've talked to friends who have seen him, and every 5 years, I remember when he showed up in TNA when they did that ECW pay-per-view in 2011 or whatever it was. And he looked great then. And he talked
one
to people
of the few
that
show.
yeah. I didn't even see the show, but I just remember seeing the highlights of him. And, you know, people, anytime I talk to somebody who sees him pop up somewhere, they say the same thing, that he looks great.
And third question, Ryan?
The third question is, Almas debuted last week, and I see him maybe beating Jeff Hardy for the secondary title to help get over, like, a Mexican talent, since they don't have Alberto Del Rio anymore. Is that where you see the direction for the character again, or do you see him feuding someone else before that?
Well, he won a squash match on SmackDown Live in his debut this past week. You know, 1 week in, it's really hard to predict. Certainly, if you go by history and how guys have debuted and how they've worked their way up the ladder, I would expect he would be in that, you know, feuding with Jeff Hardy for the U.S. title. I would figure him to be in that sort of mix to start off with. I think he's a guy that they want to push. I don't think he's going to come in as a Baron Corbin and get a good push right off the bat and then cool off and have them sour on him. I think he's a guy who's going to come in and sort of work his way up. And I think by the end of the year, I think he has potential to be in the main event mix as a top heel. I think he and Zelina Vega are really a solid main event level act, even on the main roster. And, you know, this isn't a gimmick. This isn't a character that when you get called up from NXT, you sit there and say, I don't know if that's going to translate. You know, we saw Bayley have tremendous success in NXT. And when she was called up, there was a lot of fear that WWE wouldn't know how to handle that character. And those fears were realized. I mean, just look at her now. I think the same with Revival. Revival was a top heel act in NXT, a top act period in NXT, but with their look, with their old school style, I think people saw a promotion to the main roster and sort of hesitated and said, well, I don't know what kind of push they're going to get. I don't know if they're an act that can, that creative is going to really get behind on the main roster. I think with Almas, all the ingredients are there for him to really be a favorite of creative, be a favorite of Vince McMahon, and really get over on the main roster. Michael, where do you see this Almas character developing in the next few months?
Yeah, I agree with what you said. And the one thing I really hope is that they take their time with him, because he is just, he's a fantastic wrestler, and adding Zelina Vega to the mix was what really, I think, put him over the top and made him a star to that WWE NXT audience. I really hope that they take their time, because I don't want to see him as a guy who's suddenly put into multi-man matches for the U.S. title and losing those matches, because that seems to be what WWE will do a lot of times, is they'll rush somebody into one of those matches. And once you've established somebody as constantly losing those types of matches, you're immediately putting them at a certain level. And I think he's got a lot of potential and a lot of talent, and I hope they take their time building him. You know, the first year or so of Del Rio, of his run, was really good. And then they kind of lost their way with him. And, I mean, you know, some of his limitations showed, I think. And I think Almas overall is a better performer, certainly a better in the ring. So I really hope that they take their time and don't rush things with him.
Anything else from you, Ryan, tonight?
One unique thing about that show I went to is they gave away free streamers to the fans to throw, and they told them when to throw them, and also they had a tribute contest where they gave away PWI magazines if you answered the question correctly. So do you see, any wrestling federations doing stuff like this to bring fans into the shows, or is this, pretty rare that companies are just fan-friendly?
I think with the amount of good independent wrestling that's out there, anything that you can do to set yourself apart from others and be more fan-friendly, I think that's the key. And I think that's going to be something that drives business going forward. With the age we live in, with the social media reach, it's so easy for fans to connect with wrestlers and to be fan friendly. And I think when you're at these shows, I think using social media to reach out, you know, I know NXT, I've gone to house shows where they do the fan of the night, where, you know, the best tweets or Instagrams or whatever. You know, they monitor it with the hashtag NXT and then whatever city they're in, and they'll give something away at these NXT shows. So I think anything that independent wrestling companies can do to set themselves apart and be more fan-friendly, be more interactive with the fans, that's something that's going to continue to draw those fans in. Michael, do you see things the same way?
Absolutely. And again, that goes back to, you just be the great wrestling promotion. You got to do something different. And there's been some independent companies over the last several years that have put out trading card sets that they've given away to everybody who attended. There's a set of cards from, I don't even remember what it's called. It was a promotion based in Connecticut that was given away in like 2012. And actually Sasha Banks' first trading card was in there as a Mercedes KV. So there's, you know, there's things like that, that, you know, if you're giving somebody a set of custom trading cards, or you've got a bobblehead of an independent wrestler, you're doing something like that, I think that's definitely a good way to get people in there and to build goodwill with them and get a buzz around your company.
Anything else, Ryan?
I'm just sort of curious now about this trading card set. Like, what's the value on that? I think it'd be pretty high in how many cards are in this set.
The Connecticut one? It's
the one you mentioned about Sasha Banks.
Yeah, that card of hers is pretty big when it pops up. I've seen signed versions pop up on eBay. And there's some other names in the set. I can't remember who all is in there, but there's some other names. I think like Billy Gunn might be in there. And I don't think it's Brian Danielson, but there's somebody else similar to that in that set. But a lot of things with those independent wrestling sets over the years is they kind of, it's hard to find sets. So it's real hard to put a value on them, but like, it's not at all uncommon to see when you see cards like that were independently produced of top stars, like, Seth Rollins as Tyler Black had a card from Missouri Wrestling Revival in 2010. I think it's 2010. And that it's not uncommon to see that sell for $100, you know, so it's a cool thing to look for. If you see your local indie promotion giving out cards, make sure to pick that up because you never know who's going to be in there.
Interesting. Ryan, appreciate the phone call and look forward to hearing from you again soon.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call tonight.
Sure thing.
Yeah,
515-605-9345 is the number to call. Don't forget, if you'd like to chat, press 1 on your dial pad, and you'll show up in the dashboard here as wanting to talk. If you want to call in and just listen, that's cool too. If you want to tweet a question to me, at Greg M. Parks. I know we have some Twitter questions we'll get to a little later on in the show. So we will do that as well. We're going to take a short break right now and come back and talk Monday Night Raw happenings right after this on Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLivecast.com.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I'm Wade Keller, and I urge you to be sure that you're also subscribing to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast at Podcast One and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. All you have to do is search Wade Keller in Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast app you use on your Apple or Android device to subscribe to both feeds. There's a red brand covering Raw and SmackDown every Monday night and Tuesday night, and it's downloadable a couple hours after the show. And then there's also the Wade Keller Podcast Flagship Edition on Thursdays with a rotation of co-hosts, including Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net, Todd Martin, Bruce Mitchell, and others. And then there's our Interview Friday edition. Every Friday, I'm joined by a guest who has worked in the wrestling business, including ex-WWE creative team members like Kevin Eck talking about Drew McIntyre.
Drew was a young guy, and did it go to his head, and did he walk around like he was the chosen one? He did, and I was frank with him, and I said, Drew, just so you know, this is how they view you.
And Podcast One's own Christian Harloff talking about his days working for WWE and Vince McMahon specifically.
As far as their perception of him, I mean, he's the king. He walks in, and it's just, you can feel it. I mean, if the force was real, you would feel the force powering into the room when he enters.
And pro wrestlers, including NWA World Heavyweight Champion Nick Aldis, also known as Magnus, talking about the challenges facing Ronda Rousey as she transitions from MMA to WWE.
Think about like the press conferences and stuff like that. They just, someone tells them like, all right, now it's your turn to go out there, right? I'm sure if you ask Ronda, she'd probably say this moment is the result of hundreds of people's work, meticulous preparation and planning and timing and everything. And now suddenly it's like, God, and that can be very overwhelming.
Just search Wade Keller on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen to podcasts.
Back here on PWTorchLivecast.com, Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, along with PWTorch.com contributor Michael Moore. And Michael, on Raw this past week, we saw the highlights from earlier in the day where Ronda Rousey and Nia Jax challenged Ronda Rousey to a match that will be taking place at Money in the Bank for the Raw Women's title. And my first reaction to this was, oh my gosh, what are they doing? When I found out on Twitter, it's like, okay, they're going to hand Ronda this title opportunity before she even earns it. It's going to be backlash from fans, da 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 da. The way it played out on Raw, it was Nia Jax challenging Ronda Rousey so as to seemingly avoid that kind of backlash. Still, this is a lot sooner than a lot of people thought Ronda Rousey would be getting a title match. And the defense of it is, well, if you have her in normal, regular feuds until she, quote-unquote, earns a title match, she's going to be just another wrestler. She's not going to be the superstar she should be portrayed as. So all of this taken together, Michael, how did you feel about the execution of this angle? Did it work for you? Is it the right time for Ronda to challenge for the Raw Women's title?
I thought the whole execution was kind of clunky. I think Nia's just not particularly great in her role, and I'm really concerned about that match because Nia's just not very good. She seems like, if you put her in there in a squash match, she's great. Seems like she regularly drops people, botch things, and having somebody as inexperienced as Ronda in there, I don't think that match is going to be particularly good. And again, if you're not going to put the title on Ronda, if there's, you know, there's the thought of this being where Stephanie will bring in a hired gun or Natalya turning on her. Again, I just don't like the idea of putting her into a match if you're not going to pull the trigger. And like you said, there's definitely going to be that resentment of she didn't earn it. She hasn't been here long enough. And really, if you've seen the videos that went around from their live events this past week, the six person tag she was in, Ronda looked really good. I mean, she looked crisp and she had a speed to her that most other wrestlers don't have. And I really think if they should have maybe put her in a spot where she could have surprised some people at this pay-per-view and put her in there with somebody where she just totally goes on the offensive and dominates and, you know, built up some more goodwill. I don't think you have to do the normal 6 week or whatever program that you do with a lot of other wrestlers, you know, where somebody attacks her and so they're feuding for 6 weeks and, you know, they sit there and go back and forth on promos. I think you could have done something a little simpler where somebody comes out to make their name by attacking her and, you know, they set up this match and she surprises people with it. I'm not sure this is going to do a lot of good. I mean, you see the harm that it does to people like Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar when they're obviously, when fans perceive them as protected and being the ones that are, you know, handpicked by the company. So I'm not sure this is going to do her a lot of favors.
What's your thought on it being a babyface versus babyface matchup? You know, WWE worked very hard to get Nia Jax over as a babyface against Alexa Bliss, as this anti-bullying pioneer, really working the emotional side of things very hard in that storyline, and then following that up with a challenge to Ronda Rousey, who likely will get cheered more than Nia Jax, depending on how they play things. I mean, what's your take on going babyface versus babyface for Rousey's first title opportunity?
Yeah, again, I think that was pretty clunky as part of that, too. I just don't think that's the ideal way to do things. I think the better thing would have been to have somebody come in, and I'm not even sure who that would be, but have somebody come in and run their mouth and have Ronda be the one that shuts them up, you know, and have a very clear babyface versus heel. Because Nia's fairly – I think people like her, and I think people have taken to her pretty well, but she's certainly not – a mega hot act, and getting people to cheer her over Alexa Bliss was tough enough as it was. So if she's your babyface champion, getting people to cheer her over Ronda Rousey or splitting the crowd or whatever you're doing, I don't know what they're thinking with that.
Elsewhere on Raw, Seth Rollins continued his role over Kevin Owens. We had the establishment of the B Team, Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel, their new tag team name. My next question for you, Michael, it deals with Sami Zayn and Bobby Lashley. Lashley's promo from 2 weeks ago where he talked all about his sisters, and the fallout from that is just like people's minds being blown. What was going on here? And now we have this past week on Raw, Sami Zayn vowing to present to us Lashley's sisters this coming week on Raw. What is your expectation for that angle, for that segment this week on Raw?
My expectation is terrible Vince McMahon comedy. I think that you're going to get a Shelton. Yeah, you're going to get a Shelton Benjamin's mama thing pop up, or just some really awful, stupid comedy that nobody other than Vince McMahon likes, and that they're going to lose the crowd really quickly. Really, I think it was Bruce Mitchell who said, or it might have been Todd Martin, one of the two had brought up, just get out of this thing as quickly as possible. You know, if you're going to have Lashley there, I don't see why you don't just book him as the serious MMA fighter. I don't know what they're doing with him. I don't know. This sister thing is really weird. That promo was just bizarre. And, you know, the crowd kind of likes Sammy as it is. So, I don't know that that's a particularly good matchup with just putting the two of them together. But, I don't think anybody is saying, I have to see Raw this week. I need to see what the payoff to this is going to be.
Yeah, it's. I think they probably booked backwards and they said that they wanted to do this storyline, so let's get to it by having the Lashley interview have to do with his sisters. But even as a standalone, it was not good. I don't know what else to say, and I don't know if there's anything that can be done this week in this segment to make us look back on that interview and say, yeah, it was worth it because of how they paid it off here. I don't have a lot of confidence in WWE, and neither do you, rightfully so,
yeah,
in paying off this storyline or this execution of this angle very well. We had, in the main event of Raw, Kevin Owens getting into the Money in the Bank ladder match via special treatment. Stephanie McMahon made a phone call to get Kevin Owens another chance at getting in the Money in the Bank, and he's won and is now in. We'll talk a little bit more about how the Money in the Bank ladder match shakes out a little later on. But Kevin Owens' storyline on SmackDown before he moved to Raw was he and Sami Zayn working against the powers that be, being Shane McMahon and Daniel Bryan. They were out to get him, quote unquote. And now here he is on Raw and getting special treatment and going above Kurt Angle's head. This is more than once now to get what appears from the outside looking in to be special treatment. Is this the way to go with Kevin Owens and this kind of whiny heel character who's the squeaky wheel, I guess, getting the grease from Stephanie McMahon? And where do you think this may lead with him being in constant contact with Stephanie over Kurt Angle?
You know, I don't know. It's obviously more of that inconsistent WWE writing, where this is the guy who last year headbutted her father, you know, and all of a sudden he's getting special treatment from her. So it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. As far as what it does for Kevin Owens, I think it just, Kevin Owens is Kevin Owens, and he's good enough that he's going to make this work. It's not ideal, I don't think, but I don't think it's going to hurt him in the long run. And I have no idea where they go with this. I don't know if they build to a tag match of, like they did with Shane, of Owens and somebody, or Owens and Sammy versus, you know, Angle and somebody. Not really something I want to see, but maybe they go there. Maybe Owens is wins. I don't know. Maybe he winds up as some sort of champion and is protected by Stephanie in the long run. I'm not sure. I really don't know what when your storyline revolves around your authority figures. I really don't know what the payoff is long term.
We're 39 minutes into the show before we've gotten our first Roman Reigns reference in. His storyline continued with Jinder Mahal this week, and again, Reigns not coming off particularly well for a top shelf babyface, which is how WWE sees him, and not necessarily how the fans see him. Putting Reigns with Mahal, is this a desperation Hail Mary by WWE to get Reigns cheered against a guy that they think nobody will cheer? Or is this just, you know, the next step for Roman Reigns to feud with Jinder Mahal, and WWE and Vince McMahon aren't really in desperation mode?
Yeah, I don't think they're in desperation mode. I think that was certainly a factor into it. I would guess is that, you know, nobody's going to cheer Jinder Mahal against him, you know, the way they're going to cheer Samoa Joe or whoever else. But you saw the exact opposite of that on Monday. I mean, the crowd is cheering Jinder. And I think really, I think the worst thing for them than the cheering for Roman's opponents is the crowds are going to turn on that match the way that they turned on Joe and Roman and Brock and Roman for that matter. And just totally lose interest. I mean, it certainly seemed when they moved Jinder over to Raw, I think a lot of us immediately thought, oh God, here we go. We're going to get Jinder and Roman. And at some point we're going to get Baron Corbin and Roman. And none of those are going, neither of those are going to be very good. And you would think that Roman's not going to get, you know, they're not going to cheer Roman's opponents in those cases, but they sure showed on Monday. That seems like what they're going to do. And I don't know. I mean, I don't know what really else more has to be said or done to show that this thing is not working. I mean, there's that thought out there with some of the diehards that, well, WWE stock is an all-time high, so Roman must be doing something right when really one has nothing to do with the other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's just with the stock, it's not a confirmation of what they're doing is right. I just think it gives them no incentive to change what they're doing.
Absolutely.
That's the unfortunate part of it. I mentioned a little earlier that Seth Rollins continued his role in defeating Kevin Owens in the first match of Raw. Owens, of course, later in the main event, made it into Money in the Bank. But Seth Rollins is a guy that a lot of people are just begging to be put in that top babyface spot on Raw. And, you know, they're now fantasy booking a Universal title win over Brock Lesnar. I mean, do you think if Rollins stays this hot, the WWE will look at him and say, yeah, let's put him, Brock Lesnar? Or do you think WWE just sees him as, yeah, he's a guy who can go out and wrestle 15-minute, you know, 3.5-star matches on Raw and sort of a utility player? Or do you think he's earned his way into the Universal title conversation?
I really hope that they do see him as the guy that's going to go out there and beat Brock. I don't know. I mean, I don't think there's any way to, one of the things Bruce Pritchard always says is trying to apply logic to an illogical situation. And with the way that Vince McMahon seems to change his mind, I don't know that there's any way to predict that. But Rollins right now, I mean, he's always been so good, but particularly since they did that gauntlet match going into Elimination Chamber, has just really, there's been a real organic groundswell behind him. And the crowd loves him right now. He's not, I mean, it's not to that level that Daniel Bryan was in 2013, I don't think. But he's by far just naturally their most over guy, their most popular guy. I really hope that I hope they don't send him in there and feed him to Brock. I mean, there's so many things wrong with that. I hope they don't do that. He does really feel like he's the guy right now, and he's going to have great matches, and he's, you know, he can, but I hope he's not the guy who just goes out there and eats up television time in good matches. I really do feel like they're getting to a point where there's something special about him. And
yeah.
The thing working in his favor, I think, is I don't think there's that natural pushback from WWE management the way there was against Daniel Bryan, because, you know, they did pick Seth Rollins a few years ago when he had that run as the top guy on Raw. So he's already established at that point. I mean, he doesn't look like Roman. He doesn't have Roman size, but I don't think there's the natural pushback that they had against Daniel Bryan in 2013 and 2014.
Yeah, he's already been Universal Champion. He was the top heel on Raw for a long time, and it was insufferable at times.
Yeah.
You know, there are a lot of wrestlers who make better heels than babyfaces, and I think we're seeing that Seth Rollins probably makes a better babyface than a heel. If you're to put those two runs side by side, his current babyface run and that top heel run he had. And granted, some of the booking played into that on the heel side, but he's certainly coming off as a better babyface than a heel, I think.
Yeah, I think he has just a natural connection with the crowd, and I just think that I think you're absolutely right. I think he was a good heel. I don't think he was booked well at all a lot of times, and there was a lot of screwy finishes and things like that during his reign. But I think he was a good heel. But I think that he wrestles like a babyface, and he just connects with that crowd. And I think that's when you have those things going for you, just take advantage of them. Why fight it?
515-605-9345 is the number to call if you'd like to talk to myself and Michael Moore, PWTorch.com contributor. We're going to take a break, and we'll go to Twitter for some questions right after this. You're listening to Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLivecast.com.
Wrestling fans, if you're looking for a unique and entertaining way to get your wrestling podcast fix, check out Ring Rust Radio. Ring Rust Radio uses its trademark brand of banter to cover all professional wrestling you love, including WWE, NXT, New Japan, Lucha Underground, ROH, Impact Wrestling, and more. We also hold sit-down interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of the business, such as Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Trish Stratus, AJ Styles, and Roman Reigns. For those of you who want their wrestling with a perfect mix of serious analysis and comic relief, find Ring Rust Radio dropping every Wednesday night on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts.
We learned earlier today that one of our frequent callers, Frank, could not make the show tonight. He did send in some questions via Twitter. We will do that. As always, if you want to send questions in either tonight or any Sunday night to be answered here on Wrestling Night in America by me and whatever guest co-host I have that week, you can find me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks, Michael Moore on Twitter at M. Moore Writer. So follow us. And Frank, his first question is about Nia Jax and Ronda Rousey. He says, while I can't be naive about why WWE is planning it, I don't like that as Ronda's first singles match. She should be building a run. Should she be building a run culminating in a SummerSlam title win? It is a little surprising that her first big match, singles match, and for the title is at Money in the Bank, which you don't think of traditionally as one of the major WWE pay-per-views. But I think in the last few years, with the importance of the Money in the Bank contract and with having multiple Money in the Bank matches, I think this show has sort of grown to be on, if not even footing, then I'll say similar footing as shows like SummerSlam, like Survivor Series. And, you know, we're having a NXT TakeOver show before Money in the Bank, which is always the signal that the main roster show is important when they attach a TakeOver to it. We kind of talked about the Nia Jax Ronda Rousey matchup, but Michael, to get to another part of Frank's question, is Money in the Bank right time for it, or should they have saved it for a bigger show like SummerSlam?
I think as far as the event goes, I think you're right in that SummerSlam or that Money in the Bank has certainly become one of their bigger events. It certainly feels like a show with a purpose. It doesn't feel like it's shoehorned in there like Hell in a Cell or kind of meaningless like Battleground. It certainly feels like, you know, certainly top I'd say top four, maybe ahead of Survivor Series for the year. Definitely top five. I think it's the wrong place just in the timing that it's so soon. I mean, I really think they should, and they don't have a lot of players in there who could be really good utility players who could make Ronda go out there and look like $1 million. I mean, I think Mickie James would have been the ideal first match. I mean, there wouldn't be any doubt of the outcome, but I think that would have made Ronda look really good, and Natalya as well, but obviously there's more of a storyline built into that, so that's going to take a little longer to get there. But yeah, it does feel very rushed, and even SummerSlam, I don't know if she's not going to win it this soon. I don't like the idea of doing that. If the plan's not for her to win it until WrestleMania next year or something, then don't do it. I mean, it's you don't need another Lex Luger situation where he's just got all this hype and build up and he fails, and with the hope that maybe 7 months down the road he's going to be champion again.
Well, and that brings me to you make an interesting point about Nia Jax being the first challenger. Do you think it's because WWE doesn't want to throw a Mickie James out there because of Ronda Rousey's background? The win wouldn't be in doubt. Do you think they're putting her with someone like Nia Jax, who's bigger, who's, you know, has a different strength than Ronda Rousey, to kind of put that result in doubt?
Yeah, I guess. I guess that's why they're doing it. It feels like that's kind of, unfortunately, for as much good as they've done with the women over the last few years, there's still not a lot of really big stars. You know, they've a lot of them, the Baileys and the Sashas and those people, have been wrestling each other and trading wins for so long that you get the typical WWE 50-50 booking. And so it's kind of hard to identify people on the roster who would be seen as a legitimate threat to Ronda. And I think if Nia was still in that heel role as kind of the monster, I think that might have worked out better than her as the babyface champion challenging her. It's just the whole thing is really pretty awkward.
Frank's second question has to do with WWE's TV deal, and it was reported earlier this week that USA NBC Universal wants to keep Monday Night Raw and is willing to pay an exorbitant amount of money to keep Monday Night Raw, but they are not as interested in SmackDown, which will continue to go out to bidding. So Frank's second question is sending SmackDown for bidding a way to laying the groundwork for a sale of the company, perhaps to Fox, say if they end up airing the show? The way they've been pushing content, I feel like they're trying to sell. Certainly that rumor, and with the valuation of WWE continuing to go up and with content being so in demand by networks, that conversation is going to continue. That chatter that is, you know, is WWE for sale, especially when in previous financial disclosures and in previous when people within WWE have been publicly asked about a sale, they have not denied it. And I think that has ramped up the conversation by people on the outside looking in, saying, you know, for the first time ever, it might be possible that WWE could be maybe not looking to sell, but, you know, if a Fox comes to them and says, hey, we're willing to lay X billion dollars at your feet for the company, would you do it? I think WWE, though, would have rather had Raw and SmackDown tied together. I think that's kind of how they were shopping the two as sort of tied together. But I think this could end up being more of a success for WWE, that, you know, SmackDown is able to get a different audience than Raw. You know, when you're watching USA Network and you're so conditioned as wrestling fans to watch, you know, even non-wrestling fans, you know, they went no one to avoid. If you're SmackDown and you're on another network, I think there's a better chance to add new fans than if you have two shows on the same network. The other thing I think this signals to me, if Raw is staying on USA Network, is we're not getting it cut from 3 hours. I think that was one, from a fan's point of view, one of the positives that would have come out of Raw and or SmackDown, moving to another network is it's highly unlikely that that other network would have wanted 3+ hours of Raw. You know, it may have been scaled back to 2. With it staying on USA, probably staying at 3 hours now. Michael, there's a lot to digest there. There's a lot to pick apart. Take any part of Frank's question, any part of my response, any comments you have about WWE's impending television deal and the news this week that USA may want to keep Raw, but SmackDown may go elsewhere.
Yeah, I think you did a great job of covering that better than I would have. I would say that this news of if it's true that you know they're going to get triple the amount per episode or whatever it is that they've been getting, I think that's great news for WWE. I think that's great news for WWE shareholders. I think that's terrible news for wrestling fans who don't like the direction of the current product because, as you kind of mentioned earlier, this gives Vince McMahon absolutely no incentive to change. No matter how the crowds respond to Roman Reigns, he just made more money than he's ever made on this show. And it gives him the freedom to keep doing that. And long term, I don't think it's particularly good for their viewership because, you know, they've steadily declined and they're still, you know, they're making this money because there's such a demand for live content. But, you know, their ratings have steadily declined year after year after year. And I think the continuation of the 3-hour product and the 3-hour show and the Roman Reigns show is not particularly good going forward. But it would be interesting to see what it does for SmackDown. I mean, to me, on the surface, it definitely reinforces the idea that Raw is the A show, that USA was this interested into it and then willing to let SmackDown go. But maybe if SmackDown can go elsewhere and be established a little more, I hope it doesn't end up on a second-tier network somewhere. And that it gets somewhere where it really can find an audience.
And I think that's an important point. You mentioned about the ratings. I think the Raw ratings are up over last year's, but before that, I mean, there was certainly a consistent decline. If SmackDown is to go, say, to FS1 or FS2 or Amazon or Facebook, which are two companies that are supposedly in the bidding for SmackDown or for WWE properties. You know, it'll be interesting to see how WWE works the brand split because USA would have a far greater reach than any of those. And would you be as willing to put top stars on those shows where they're not seen by as many people or don't have the potential even to be seen by as many people as Monday Night Raw? You know, do you even keep the brand split? I mean, is there a point to keep the brand split when one show is so much more has so much more potential eyeballs to it than another show? And it'll be interesting to if that happens, if SmackDown does go to a lesser network or go to an online platform, it'll be interesting to see if there's any movement from wrestlers to and fro or an end of the brand split altogether. I think that'll be interesting to watch. The other question from Frank, his third question, with the success of All In, could indie shows like this eventually be streamed on some platform similar to WWE Network? I feel like WWE needs competition, and until New Japan gets more of a U.S. footing, I don't see it or Impact moving the needle. You know, I don't think Cody ruled out the possibility of All In being on a streaming platform of some sort, though I know that they want to be as independent from any other company as possible for this show. You know, I think that's really – it's really more of a question, are we going to see more shows like All In, first of all, before we can assume any kind of streaming platform? There are a number of streaming platforms, GWN for Impact, and they have a Twitch channel, too, that they push very heavily on TV. You know, certainly WWN, New Japan's streaming service. You have a lot of independent wrestling out there being streamed. Is anything ever going to touch WWE Network? Probably not. And I don't think adding All In as long as it's a one-off show or even a twice-a-year show, I don't think that it's going to move any kind of needle to compete with WWE streaming service.
Yeah, I think And I think Cody mentioned one of the obstacles to that, too, is that if you have guys who are under contract to other wrestling promotions who are going to work that are free to work live events but maybe can't be seen on some sort of television show. You know, there were some issues when Ricochet was working in New Japan that at times he wasn't able to be on. There was the show they did in the U.S. last year where he wasn't able to be on their show, and I don't remember all the details because of his commitment to Underground. So you got to be aware of that too. And I agree. I don't think All In showing up on somebody else's stream. First of all, I don't think other than New Japan, there's anybody who is going to have the reliability to stream that live that would compete with WWE Network. I think what All In could be, though, is I really think it could be a shot in the arm for traditional pay-per-view, and whether that's through your cable company or online or someplace, but if they're out there to market that and they were to put it up for $20 or $25 or whatever it is, I think they could do pretty good business with that. I don't think the TNA model of running these two or three pay-per-views a year for $50 going up against the network being $10 is a very good idea, but I think fans in a heartbeat would pay $20 or $25 to be able to some form of pay-per-view.
And we're going to break protocol and allow Frank a fourth question, partly because it dovetails into what we're going to talk about in our next segment. So we'll get to Frank's question right after this break. Back with more Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLivecast.com.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to PWTorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
Back here on Wrestling Night in America on pwtorchlivecast.com. With Michael Moore, PWTorch.com contributor. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, and we're answering a final question from Frank, who tweeted at Greg M. Parks to ask his questions. He says, if you guys have time to allow a fourth question, I just want to know what you think Randy Orton's knee injury does to SmackDown side of the pond, Samoa Joe or Rusev babyface. Thanks. Have a great show. I look forward to listening tomorrow. And Randy Orton's knee injury, he's going to be out for some time now. It was a nagging knee injury that Orton took care of after his Backlash loss to Jeff Hardy. Certainly Orton was, I would say, a top five babyface on SmackDown. He was, in that U.S. title hunt. But, I think certainly Rusev as a babyface, he kind of already is, no matter how he's booked. Samoa Joe, I look at him, he's got a match coming up this coming week against Big Cass. I mean, is he already a babyface? There are certain ways to look at it, but, there is lots of shades of gray on this SmackDown side, too. So, Michael, how do you see WWE replacing Randy Orton on the babyface side of things?
Yeah, I don't know if it really shakes things up too much. I think that they really ought to look at the babyface side of that, though, because the babyface side of SmackDown is not particularly strong, and it's kind of shaky when you have, Randy Orton out now, and Jeff Hardy just always kind of feels like with the wear and tear on his body that he's a step away from another injury. So, I'm trying to think of who else would even, be ready to step into that role of who, Rusev has been so popular and so over, but they don't seem like they're in any hurry to listen to the crowd on that. Joe maybe moving there. I don't know if this is Joe becoming a babyface or if this is more of a demotion of Big Cass after the incident a couple weeks ago. But it's kind of hard to say. I mean, I don't know that Randy Orton one way or another, the B-plus player that Wade always talks about. I don't know if an injury to him one way or another really does a lot to change the show one way or another.
Well, the reason I wanted to take that question from Frank is because SmackDown was next on my list of things to talk about, and we saw this past week that New Day defeated The Bar to earn a spot for one member of the New Day into the Money in the Bank ladder match. That representative of New Day has not been revealed yet, but you know, with that coming on the heels of Randy Orton's injury, and really even without Randy Orton's injury, the lack of a strong babyface roster on the SmackDown side, do you think that, you know, these two in combination with each other make it so that New Day may be going their separate ways and we get a couple single stars out of that group?
I hope so. I mean, I think, and I think a lot of people have pointed this out, but I think there's real money at Big E as a single. And I don't think you even need to break New Day up necessarily. I mean, I think you can. I don't see any reason. I mean, WWE doesn't typically do this, but I don't see why you couldn't keep all of them together and have Big E as the single and Kofi
that's
and Xavier
point.
Tag team or whatever way they go. And the act doesn't even really need to change. I mean, I just don't think having one of them turn on the other would go over too well with the crowd. But, you know, I'm guessing, I don't know, maybe Kofi gets the spot. But I think Big E is definitely the guy that if you want to elevate somebody, he'd be the one I'd go with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see which one of them gets into the Money in the Bank ladder match in just under a month away. Also on SmackDown Live this past week, we had the continuation of the Daniel Bryan Big Cass feud, and with Bryan shockingly losing the week before to Rusev in a Money in the Bank qualifier, there was a lot of heads being scratched over that decision, and the hope was the story would be that Big Cass beating down Daniel Bryan after Backlash would, in the story, have played a part in Daniel Bryan losing to Rusev, which is exactly what happened this past week on SmackDown. So Bryan and Cass continues their feud. We had the debut of Andrade Cien Almas, which was discussed a little earlier on this show. We also had the Melibration for the SmackDown Women's Champion over there in the UK. And Shinsuke Nakamura defeating AJ Styles to choose the stipulation at Money in the Bank in their title rematch. Next week, we have Lana versus Billie Kay in a women's Money in the Bank qualifying match. We have Samoa Joe versus Big Cass. Those are scheduled for next week. I want to ask you about Daniel Bryan versus Big Cass. It looks like, although I don't think it's been officially announced yet, a rematch with those two at Money in the Bank. Taking everything into consideration with Daniel Bryan, would you rather have him facing Big Cass at Money in the Bank versus being in that Money in the Bank ladder match?
You know, I've had a hard time with Daniel Bryan since he's been back watching him wrestle, because that fear is just always in the back of my mind that he's going to get hurt. And so I don't know that putting him in a Money in the Bank ladder match would be something I'd particularly want to see. That said, I certainly don't want to see him against Big Cass either, but I don't know why people are that all that surprised. I mean, there was kind of this narrative when he came back that WWE was going to suddenly be in the Daniel Bryan dream match business. And that's not how they treated him before. You know, his first long program after he won the title was with Kane. So, I mean, I don't think that there was ever going to be this dream match, you know, one after another program. But I think there has to be a better option than Big Cass to go in there with him. I mean, I don't think he should be putting over Big Cass, but at the same time, I don't know what he gets out of beating Big Cass. And I don't know that helps Big Cass in the long term either. What do you think, Greg? Where are you at on watching Daniel Bryan wrestle? Would you be comfortable with him in a Money in the Bank ladder match, or?
I think that given all the tests that he had to go through to get cleared, I'm trying to be as comfortable as I can. I think, you know, on an unconscious level, I'm probably cringing a little bit at what he's doing, but I can't sit here and say I don't think he should be doing it. With all the tests that he's passed, which with as stringent as WWE is watching him, and supposedly testing him after every match, you know, he may be one of the healthier guys on the roster with, you know, with the constant wear and tear that these guys have been under. And I'm curious as to if they took some of the tests that Daniel Bryan did to get cleared, what their results would be. you know, it's a business where, you know, you're in a car crash every night. And I'm trying to be as good as I can with what he's doing. There was a time where I didn't think he should come back. There was a time, and I was very open about this, I never thought WWE would clear him. I just thought that the fallout from that would be too great for WWE to clear him, even if he was 100% healthy. And I don't know how much, you know, I know that they had doctors clear him and everything like that, and they could have been, he could have done that till the cows come home, and WWE could have just said, no, we've made our decision, we're not going back on it. But I wonder how much his value to the indies really played a part in them wanting to say, well, if he's going to do it, let's do it here. And Triple H has talked about in interviews about Daniel Bryan that, you know, they would rather have him wrestling for WWE where wrestlers are monitored a lot closer than, you know, in an independent show in front of 200 people where the indie promoter is trying to break even, you know? So, I don't know if I'd be excited about him being in the Money in the Bank ladder match, but I think I'm getting better and better at being okay with watching him wrestle. That's sort of where I am. It's a very push-pull because I think it's very human to look at that and say and cringe every time he takes a what appears to be a bad fall or whatever like that. And I don't know that that will ever fully go away, but I'm trying to tell myself over and over again, you know, he's cleared, he's healthy, he feels good, he wants to do this, and WWE would not clear him to do it if they had any reservation whatsoever about him getting hurt again or anything like that. So that's a long way of saying I'm trying to be okay with it, I guess is is what I'm trying to say. You know, I think the thing with Cass too, and with Daniel Bryan is, you know, you made mention of the fact that, well, Daniel Bryan wasn't booked all that well before his injury. What made people think that he would come back and all of a sudden be this big star? You know, I think there was a belief that absence would make the heart grow fonder for WWE, that, you know, it's one of those you don't know what you got till it's gone situation. WWE kind of took Daniel Bryan for granted. And then when he wasn't there anymore to wrestle, the idea, I guess, in some fans' minds was that they would appreciate him more. And then when they did get him back to wrestle, they would utilize him in a better way upon his comeback. You know, that hasn't happened yet. I'm not ready to write it off and say Daniel Bryan's never going to be a title contender or a top title contender, and he's not going to be a main eventer. I'm not ready to say that yet based on the booking since he's come back. You know, he's kind of working his way back into things, and you know, WWE may think he's got to work some rust off of it. And I think it's a compliment to Daniel Bryan too, that having him work with Big Cass. And I know that in the past, anyway, before his injury, they had big plans for Big Cass. So to put him in there with someone like Daniel Bryan, I think is a thumbs up to Daniel Bryan, that they think he can give Big Cass some rub, that working with Daniel Bryan can help get Cass over as a heel and maybe help him improve in the ring as well. So, you know, that's kind of my take on Bryan versus Cass. I mean, do you see it that way, or are you not as confident that they see Bryan as that top star?
Yeah, I just don't think they see Bryan as that top star at all. And I don't think they ever have. And I don't think, you know, I think he'll be in the mix. I think that's fine. I just don't think that, I mean, there was certainly a thought when he got cleared that people started, you know, putting together this list of WWE can do this and this and this and this. And WWE just wasn't going to be – the Daniel Bryan Dream Tour wasn't going to be at the top there. And I'm not sure it should have been. I mean, I'm not saying that at all. But, you know, if there's more money to be made with Daniel Bryan versus The Miz than Daniel Bryan versus Shinsuke Nakamura, you go that route. You go where the money is, and you know, this dream match concept doesn't always work. I mean, you can look at AJ versus Nakamura these last however many months and see that people had really high hopes for this, and this certainly has not gone. And a lot of it's been the way it's been presented and the WWE confines they've had in the ring, but that, you know, the AJ and Nakamura thing hasn't exactly set the world on fire either.
Yeah. Okay, so you don't see WWE eyeing Daniel Bryan as a top star. Do you see him ever getting to even the AJ Styles level on SmackDown, where Styles clearly isn't the top star of WWE, but he's the guy carrying the SmackDown brand. Do you see Daniel Bryan even being in a position like AJ Styles is in, where he's champion and he's sort of the standard bearer for the brand? Or do you see WWE booking him at an even lower level than that?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think he'll be at I don't see any reason why he couldn't be at that level. I think they're still maybe a little hesitant with him, and I think they're right in that, because you want to make sure that the guy's going to be able to hold up for a little bit. But I don't see, you know, why SmackDown couldn't be the Daniel Bryan show. It kind of feels to me like SmackDown is ready for a shakeup. Like, as great as AJ is, he's been in that role for quite a while now. So maybe it's time to change things up a little bit, and maybe Bryan chases The Miz, because I think a lot of us, not to jump ahead, but I think a lot of us are kind of expecting The Miz maybe wins the Money in the Bank. So maybe do we see Bryan chasing Miz into next year's WrestleMania if he's still around by then?
Yeah, could be. And with Nakamura getting another chance at Styles at Money in the Bank, that could be a situation where WWE decides to put the title on Nakamura finally. We will see.
Yeah.
We will be back with a preview of Money in the Bank. We'll talk NXT. We'll talk Impact. We'll fit a lot into a little time here on Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLivecast.com.
Rich Fan, formerly of the Primetime Friday Laughcast with Bruce Mitchell here. I want to tell you about my new show, The Deep Dive with Rich Fan. On Saturdays at 6 p.m. Eastern weekly, join us as we dive into a single subject. Some weeks as serious as race, gender, and stereotyping in wrestling, to as fun as which IC champs could fit into another era, and anything in between. We'll have guests from inside and outside the Torch family to cover the subject of the week, and of course your calls and emails. Prior to each episode, I'll put out on social media the subject and some notes. Places where you can also bone up on the subject of the week, if you're so inclined. I'll also devote shows to two of my favorite international promotions, New Japan Pro Wrestling and Progress. All are welcome. No secret handshakes here, because Saturday nights on the live cast are officially all right for diving.
Back here on Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLivecast.com, Greg Parks, Michael Moore here with you. Evolve 104 took place last night in Summit, Illinois. Catchpoint retained the tag titles over The End. Austin Theory retained the WWN title over DJZ. And in the main event, Matt Riddle over Shane Strickland. Evolve 105 going on right now in Livonia, Michigan. The Evolve title, a no-rope break match, billed as the Final War. Matt Riddle against Keith Lee, who is WWE bound by all reports. Darby Allin versus Shane Strickland also on the card, as well as Catchpoint against James Drake and Anthony Henry for the tag titles. Also yesterday, New Japan had their Best of Super Juniors Night 2. Takahashi over Marty Sabin over Kushida. Dragon Lee over Sho and Desperado over Taguchi were the block tournament matches in that one. Money in the Bank coming up June 17th. It has AJ Styles versus Shinsuke Nakamura for the SmackDown Championship. The WWE Championship on SmackDown. The Men's Money in the Bank, one more reveal is all we have. It'll be Kevin Owens, Bobby Roode, Braun Strowman, The Miz, Rusev, Finn Balor, and a member of New Day. Those are the seven of the eight competitors. The Women's Money in the Bank is just half full at this point. It is Alexa Bliss, Charlotte, Ember Moon, and Becky Lynch in that match. Also in a singles action, Ronda Rousey versus Nia Jax for the Raw Women's Championship, and Asuka against Carmella for Carmella's SmackDown Women's Championship. Over on NXT this past week, we had a Tommaso Ciampa, Candice LeRae confrontation. Lacey Evans defeated Brandi Lauren, who you may have seen as Ava Story on Impact Wrestling. And Evans continues her beef with Kairi Sane. Ricochet versus Velveteen Dream wrestled to a no contest when Lars Sullivan interfered. And Kona Reeves defeated Raul Mendoza. And in the main event, Pete Dunne, Oney Lorcan, and Danny Burch defeated the Undisputed Era. And it was funny to me, Michael, when Ricochet versus Dream was going on, and you could tell the fans were all about this match, and it had gone a few minutes, and it was on its way to being a really good match. And then you heard this, like, almost audible groan from the crowd, and you couldn't see what was going on, but then all of a sudden Lars Sullivan appears in the ring, and it wasn't like heel heat for Sullivan. It was almost like the crowd was saying, no, please don't interrupt this match. It's going to be so awesome. that was kind of the sense that I got from that. And next week on NXT TV, it'll be Sullivan versus Dream and Ricochet in a handicap match. But I, too, was groaning from home watching that, thinking that I was being robbed of Ricochet versus Velveteen Dream.
Yeah, and I don't think people necessarily dislike Lars Sullivan. I mean, I think he's got Dream and Ricochet have really good chemistry together, and they're both guys that the crowd likes a lot, and that match was on the way to being something really good. And, yeah, you certainly have that ugh, you know, that we can spot the bad booking thing coming in here right now.
And that was, you know, Sullivan's over as a heel for the most part. The crowd, you know, will cheer him because they like the big guys to destroy people, Exhibit A, Braun Strowman. But I think that was the most heat Sullivan may have ever gotten just for interrupting that match, not because, you know, he was a heel, as I said, but because he was interrupting a match that a lot of people were looking forward to. Also, next week, Heavy Machinery against TM61 in a tag match. So that's what's to look forward to next week on NXT television. A little bit about the women's division in NXT. We have Kairi Sane and her beef with Lacey Evans. We have Dakota Kai being scared out of her boots of Shayna Baszler. Lacey Evans is someone who I'm not really sold on yet. I've seen her live, I think, a couple of times here in Florida on the Florida Loop before she got, you know, sort of promoted to television. And, you know, her look, her character, there just isn't a lot that impresses me about her. I know you probably, you know, seen her on NXT TV. It's a limited amount of time, granted. But, you know, that's a pretty plum position going opposite Kairi Sane, given Sane's pedigree.
Yeah, it really is. She's, like you said, there's just something that doesn't click with her. And unfortunately, right now, there's not a lot going on in the NXT women's division that does click. I mean, they've got a really, really strong champion, and they've got Kairi Sane, but there's not a lot of, you know, there's certainly not that star power that they had when people felt like there was really something special going on with whether it was Bayley and Sasha or Ember Moon and Oscar, whoever it was, you know, it certainly Lacey Evans doesn't feel like the one to be in that position right now.
We've got this situation with Dakota Kai and Shayna Baszler and now Nikki Cross getting involved. You know, there are some who are saying that this is really a detriment to Dakota Kai to be cowering, you know, from Shayna Baszler. I like how it's played out. I think Dakota has played her role really well. I like how it makes Shayna Baszler look. She's playing the tough act really well, and part of it is I don't think it's an act. You know, she is a legit tough woman. And then you've got Nikki Cross, who is just this, you know, still playing that Sanity character, even though Sanity is out of NXT and they're ready to debut on SmackDown Live anytime now. And she's playing this out of control, you know, sort of whirling dervish and almost like playing a protector to Dakota Kai the last few weeks of Shayna Baszler. So now Shayna's got, you know, she's picking on Dakota Kai, but over here she's got Nikki Cross in her way. So talk about how you think they've done with Shayna since she's gotten away from Ember Moon. Ember Moon obviously up on the main roster now, and Shayna Baszler as the heel NXT Women's Champion.
Yeah, I think Shayna carries herself really well, and I think they've presented her really well as just a killer. And I think that more so than maybe anybody other than Asuka that they've had in that role, I think way more so than Nia Jax or just about anybody else. And I think it's, you know, the Dakota Kai thing doesn't really bother me because I think when you have a heel champion that's a killer like that, I think there should be people who are afraid of her or, you know, don't quite feel ready to step up to her so that when you do have the Nikki Cross or somebody like that, you do have somebody who's ready to do it, but I don't think everybody should just be ready to step up to that challenge, you know, and Shayna's done a really good job so far. And I think, you know, there was obviously when she first signed, there was that, she's there as a way to get Ronda Rousey into the company or she's, you know, well, she's only there because she's Ronda Rousey's friend, and she's done a fantastic job, I think, so far. She's improved a lot in the ring, and she's always carried herself really well.
This past week on Impact, it was a newsworthy show in that DJ Z and Andrew Everett rather defeated Eli Drake and Scott Steiner for the tag titles. Tessa Blanchard over Kira Hogan. Madison Rayne, who is doing commentary with her husband Josh Matthews, ran out to stave off a further attack by Tessa on Kira. Kongo Kong defeated Grado. Eddie Edwards defeated Sami Callihan in a street fight that was held at House of Hardcore. Brian Cage over Facade, which was at a Destiny World Wrestling event in Brian Cage's tour around the world, basically, as they've been billing him on Impact. Su Yung held a quote-unquote funeral for Rosemary. And Pentagon and Phantasma defeated Austin Aries and Matt Sydal in the main event of Impact. Next week, LAX takes on the Cult of Lee, OVE versus Drago and Aerostar, Moose against Kongo Kong, Matt Sydal versus Phantasma for the X Division title. And they are building to an under-pressure Impact Wrestling event on TV that will take place May 31st. So as Impact has done under previous regimes, they are building to semi-monthly, I guess, major television shows because of the rarity of pay-per-views that Impact has. And on that May 31st show, thus far announced, Tessa Blanchard versus Madison Rayne, Pentagon Jr. versus Austin Aries for the Impact World Championship. Tessa Blanchard is someone who was male or female, one of the biggest name free agents, I guess, on the independent scene. She comes to Impact Wrestling, made her debut at their last pay-per-view in a invading the commentary position when there was a women's match going on. She's been on now for a couple of weeks. Michael, what's your take on Tessa Blanchard and what she can add to the Impact Knockouts division?
I like Tessa a lot. For the first time I saw her a few years ago when she was, I think she was just a teenager at that point. And she's always had, certainly, I mean, she's got the pedigree and she's always carried herself really well. For me with Impact, it's so hard to get invested in anybody there because it feels like so often somebody's there for a set of tapings and then they're gone. You know, and so, you know, is she going to be, because they've done this with so many other people. So is she going to be a part of this company going forward, or, you know, is she going to be there through this next network special, whatever you call it, and then gone the next night? So, I mean, I really do feel like she's the type of person that they could be building that division around. I just think that the foundation of that company is so shaky that it's so hard to get behind, to really get excited about one or two people being the cornerstones of that company. You know, it kind of feels like they're going that way with Brian Cage, maybe. But again, when you just don't know what's going to happen from one set of tapings to the next, and they're taping what feels like 5 years of TV at a time, you know, it's so hard to get invested in.
Yeah.
That.
The Eddie Edwards, Sami Callihan situation, I think their feud has been one of the highlights of Impact the last few months. But there was a thought that occurred to me as I was watching the show this week, and I tweeted it out. The week prior, they had shown Sami Callihan's attack on Don Callis, and a lot was made about Impact Management deciding the fate of Sami Callihan within the company. Eddie Edwards had sort of stormed in the meeting and demanded that they not fire Callihan because he wanted to get his hands on Sami and he wanted to continue his, you know, beatdown of Sami Callihan. And Impact Management sort of said, okay, but we're not going to sanction it. You can't do it here. So that's why this match ended up happening, this street fight ended up happening on a House of Hardcore event. Where Edwards defeats Sami Callihan. And my thinking was, okay, so Impact wasn't going to sanction, nor would they hold that match in an Impact Wrestling ring. Why did Eddie Edwards then need to go to them to not have them fire Sami Callihan? Thinking being, okay, Impact fires Sami Callihan, Eddie can still go on that House of Hardcore event and fight Sami Callihan. There's nothing stopping. We know that Impact is partnering with all these promotions, and certainly with Tommy Dreamer having appeared on Impact recently on television in matches, certainly that's a partnership. So why couldn't they have just fired Sami and then Eddie goes on this independent show and fights him in the street fight, which is what he ended up doing anyway, because TNA or Impact wouldn't sanction the match. So that to me was somewhat of a logical call in this, but Michael, what's been your take on Eddie Edwards versus Sami Callihan, this feud that, I mean, it's really become a blood feud on Impact.
Yeah, I think, like you said, I think that's been probably the highlight of that promotion. Sami Callihan is so good and so droll, and Eddie Edwards is a little flat and lacking in personality, I think, but I think this is the perfect role for him, and I think he's done really well in that. But you're absolutely right about it, and I was thinking those same things about the whole thing about, you know, well, I'm going to go to our board and make sure I don't get fired, but I'm going to go do it on another company's show, and Impact's not going to sanction this, and it's not going to happen, but we're going to show it on our TV show, and the whole thing, I mean, that company is just, no matter who owns it, and certainly the creative isn't as bad as a lot of the Vince Russo stuff, but they're just snake-bitten. It feels like that no matter who runs it, no matter how well thought of Scott D'Amore and Don Callis are, two guys that I really like, it's just so hard to make sense of what they do sometimes. But yeah, as far as just a straight-up wrestling feud, I mean, that's been really good, and I always kind of look forward to Sami Callihan's promos going into that, because he's so believable in what he does, and certainly one of the highlights each week on that show.
And I don't know, maybe I'm just making too big of a deal of that and mentioning it on Twitter and then again here, but it was just a thought that occurred to me that, you know, maybe Eddie didn't need to ask for Sami not to be fired. I don't know. You know, the other question I had for you, Michael, and the last question of the show here before we wrap things up, Eli Drake. I talked about him a couple weeks ago on Impact because he had lost a rematch against Austin Aries for the Impact title, and it was before he won the tag title with Scott Steiner, and I'm kind of like, you know, where does Drake go from here? And now that he's lost to Austin Aries for the world title, now he's lost the tag titles this past week with Scott Steiner. I mean, there was a time where Drake was pushed as the biggest star of Impact, and now he's losing quite a bit, and the shine seems to be off of him, at least for this regime. Do you see him just kind of settling into a mid-card role, or do you think there's still some upward mobility for him in the near future?
There should be. I mean, I think that he carries himself really well. He's a little bit older. I keep saying that, but he's a little bit older. But I keep kind of waiting for him to sign with WWE and to show up there kind of in the way that EC3 did. I don't know that he's in the ring, you know, on par with, certainly not with Ricochet and guys like that. But I think as a promo, he's great. I don't know what you do in Impact if you're not wrestling for the title. I mean, you get put into a comedy program with Grado, or do you put what else do you do? I mean, you know, I just don't know.
It depends on who's on the roster during that taping cycle.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I don't know what they do with him, but I do think he's a guy that could be and should be in a better position than he is and more prominently featured. I mean, I didn't think they did a particularly good job of with him as the champion, but that's kind of, I hate to say it, but that's kind of par for the course for that company. But, you know, he's a guy that's got a lot of talent, kind of walks that line a little bit too much of doing a rock impersonation sometimes, but yeah. Is good enough, I think, that he overcomes that. He's a really good talker, and certainly it feels like he should be a bigger deal than he is.
Well, Michael, that's all the time we have for this week. Great to talk to you again. Great to have you on the show, and we'll certainly be in touch about having you on the show again sometime in the future. And for those of you listening, don't forget to check out Michael's columns, collectibles columns, on pwtorch.com quite frequently. So, Michael, thanks again for being on the show.
Yeah, absolutely, Greg. Thanks again for having me, and look forward to seeing who you have on next week.
Great, and you can follow me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks. When we get the guest, we'll tweet that out, and you can follow along there. I tweet during Raw and SmackDown, sometimes Impact, other slices of life, that sort of thing. And again, you know, if you enjoy what we do here at the Livecast, if you're a frequent listener and you're not a VIP member of PW Torch, I implore you to become a member. Just try it. In fact, we'll tell you right now all the advantages of being a VIP member.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free addition to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan 4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer. And there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan 4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip.
Yeah.